This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joy Drive.
Politicians, policy, and what's happening in Parliament. It's our politics professional on Joy Drive.
Dr. James Murphy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
I'm excited to see you today because I know you have so much to tell
You're
us.
You're always excited to see me, Warren.
I am. Tell us about, let's start off with the Robodebt Royal Commission report.
Yes.
That is out.
It's out. It's out and it's damning. I think we were all expected that. I was in talking about the Robodebt Royal Commission a couple of times over the last kind of year. It was set up in August. And as people were giving evidence to that commission, we heard a lot of the details that now appear in the report. What is a little bit surprising is how damning and sort of direct the report is about ministers, about senior public servants. That it finds, like, number one, it sort of rejects their evidence as being untrue. And number two sort of says that they have so fundamentally failed in their responsibilities that in a couple of cases, and we don't know which cases, they've kind of recommended criminal prosecution of high-level
people.
That's big. It's big. It's really big. They had a whole sealed section of the report that they're not publishing that goes off to the federal police and a few other agencies to be like, you should consider further criminal investigation of these people.
Isn't it in our interest, the public's interest, that that is published?
We'll find out at some point if those agencies decide to take action, I suppose. I think what the Royal Commission is trying to do there is to create space for a criminal prosecution to happen. If it publishes, like, so-and-so, we think so-and-so is guilty of a crime, they sort of prejudice the case that might come later. So they don't want to, like, ruin the court case or whatever that may come down the track, which is why it's sealed for now.
Okay.
But I expect that we'll find out sooner or later at least some of the people that have been recommended, because they'll get prosecuted. Like,
do you think there'll be leaks?
Leaks, not out of the Royal Commission itself, out of some of the agencies that the sealed section's gone to. I mean, maybe. I think everyone, though, will probably be pretty sensitive about trying to make sure that everything's above board there, because there's already been a Royal Commission into this and lots of heads are rolling anyway. I think the sensitivities will be extra high. But that doesn't mean it's impossible.
The whole Robodebt thing made people feel like they were criminals. So something has to be done to rectify the situation. And why didn't the public service sort of say, no, this isn't legal?
Yeah, it's an incredible story. And to me, the most interesting and concerning section is about the ways in which the public service buried and withheld information that it came across suggesting that it was illegal because they didn't want to upset the minister, because they wanted to give the minister a yes, right? When the minister is like, I want to do something about this, they came up with this program and they were like, let's hold on to that information that some of the lawyers in the department are saying, well, we're not sure about this. This might be a bad idea. They're like, you shut up and like keep that to yourself. We're going to go forward with a yes. And some really senior people have been kind of called out for withholding information, misleading cabinet, misleading ministers, misleading like other investigatory bodies for keeping that on the down low. And these are people who are still working in the public service now, maybe not for very long.
Scott Morrison, who was social services minister, was an initiator of the scheme, and the report says he allowed cabinet to be misled.
Yeah. The argument about that is that he should have tried to find out if there was a legal basis for the scheme. It didn't try very hard. He claimed to the Royal Commission that, it's established practice, this method of income averaging. That's like the core of the Robodebt thing, this income averaging element where to work out if someone's got a Centrelink debt, they'll average out your ATO statement to figure it out. And it led to all these like thousands of incorrect debts. Scott Morrison was claiming, that's just a normal thing that we do. And the Royal Commission was like, we reject as painfully untrue, Scott Morrison's claim about XYZ. Scott Morrison being Scott Morrison, he says, I reject everything that the Royal Commission has said. It's all lies and biased, and I'm not going anywhere. But the pressure on him has intensified to, I don't know, resign or accept some responsibility or something. It doesn't seem likely, but the pressure is mounting.
What does it say, though, James, about the culture? And I'm not necessarily saying the previous government, I suppose any government, where the public service is, I suppose, fearful of giving advice because of the reaction they might get, even if that advice is incorrect.
Yeah. It's really, like, it seems like the a simple test to be like, even at minimum, the public service, if it works out that a policy is probably illegal, should tell the minister. Mm. Like that's like an easy test.
Yeah.
The hard test would be like, this policy is highly controversial and we think it's bad, but you, the government, think it's right. We're still going to tell you it's bad. Like, that's the hard test. Mm. The public service fails that hard test all the time these days. But now, like, we should now set the bar lower for the expectation of the public service that it won't even tell a government your scheme is illegal. This is, like, so concerning. And one of the arguments about this is like the degree to which the public service needs to be rebuilt. The culture is rotten, and it's kind of goes a lot of layers into the public service that they are so terrified of appearing, positive for the minister and giving them good news. Like it's a fundamental problem.
Do you think we'll see changes?
Some, yes. Whether this scandal alone is enough to cause a wholesale renegotiation of the relationship between the public service and the ministry, I'm not sure. I think there's like, that's a generational project, really. But just as an example of how, like, the degree to which they weren't doing their duty, and this like might lead us into the next item.
I feel like this is like a soap opera.
It's got a lot to it.
What did you watch last night? I watched the Robodebt Royal Commission
report. You could.
It sounds so ridiculous, it's true.
It's melodramatic and shocking. Mm. And the tone of the report was like that as well. The report had a shocked tone. It was like, I kind of can't believe I'm reporting this, but. And one of the things that it reported on was at one point when the department was like, I wonder how this terrible and possibly illegal scheme is going. Let's bring in some consultants to like tell us how it's going. And they brought in PricewaterhouseCoopers. Oh, no. Yeah, right.
Tomorrow night's episode.
Yeah,
what
yeah,
are
well
we?
Known, yeah, well known, trustworthy organization, PricewaterhouseCoopers, was brought in. And they asked them, like, how's the scheme going? Could you do a big review of it? And PricewaterhouseCoopers said, sure, give us a little north of $800 million, and yes, we will do that for you. And they went off to do this big comprehensive review. It seems as if probably along the way they either worked out themselves that it was probably illegal, the scheme, or at minimum decided that it was a horrible failure, like that it was like issuing all these wrong debts and was going badly wrong. And when they wrote their big report, they were like, let's not give them that report because that's bad news.
So they held it back too.
Yeah, they held it back as well. Instead, they gave them a 8-page PowerPoint for their – so that's $100 million per page of the PowerPoint. And so when this Royal Commission finding comes out, the PricewaterhouseCoopers, which for reasons we'll explain is in kind of image rehabilitation mode, decided we're going to pay back the $830 million or thereabouts in fees that we charged the government just to say, like, yeah, sorry, our bad. We never gave you the report and we probably should have found out that this whole program was totally stuffed up.
So. Oh, no. So just think about it, though. $800 million to PwC for the report. I'm not sure how much the robo-debt claimed for the government in terms of fees, but I'm sure, you know, they would have been better off just saving $800 million
perhaps
in the first place.
I can tell you that the government paid out close to $2 billion in compensation for the robo-debt scheme. It's a colossal failure of public policy. I'll be teaching it in my classes for years. Like, it's really bad. It's really full-on.
It is terrible. Yeah. And as much as we laugh about the stuff-up, it did impact people's lives severely.
Disastrously. Some people's lives were totally destroyed by this. They felt hunted by debt collectors and stuff like this. It was a totally aggressive scheme. And the Royal Commission is upfront and frank about that. It says, like, this was a cruel and unfair scheme. Legality aside, it has all this stuff to say about the way politicians talk about welfare recipients in this country
exactly.
And the need for a change of attitude.
Let's move on to the next thing, asylum seeker hotel detention. What's going on there?
Yeah, there was a big legal case about this. So after the Medivac legislation was brought in a couple of parliaments ago, allowing for asylum seekers in offshore detention to be brought to mainland Australia for medical treatment, heaps of them ended up in hotels being detained. Not unlike hotel quarantine, right? Like mm-hmm. we return travellers only. Hotel quarantine was a horrible impost on people for, 2 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
These people were in there for years. Some people in rooms where there's only a few centimetres of window that let in light to their rooms.
Imagine what impact that would have.
It was traumatic for a lot of people, and it resulted in this court case being brought. The federal court ruled on this just recently, and they found it was kind of a strange judgment where the judge was like, look, this is probably illegal, but it's definitely not ethical. So they found that the Minister for Home Affairs had the legal justification to hold people in this situation, but found that it was totally cruel and inhumane, and they really probably shouldn't be doing it. The Amnesty International Australia was one of the organisations involved in helping Moz bring this case, and they're considering whether they appeal based partly on the fact that the judge was like, yeah, it's totally like inhumane what you're doing. It's weird for a policy to be legal,
but,
like,
not, tick,
but really inhumane. Like, so they think there might be still something in there.
I mean, it got one of them right compared to the previous robo-debt policy. So are we likely to see an end to any hotel detention?
Not at this stage. It's being used considerably less now than it was. There aren't all that many people still in hotel detention, but there are still some. And the government recently made a statement, like after the judgment, saying, we try to use it as little as possible, but we do still use it sometimes. So the government has sort of like made it a smaller part of their detention scheme, but it's still in there. And they're not all that apologetic about it, honestly. Yeah.
We're chatting to Dr. James Murphy from the University of Melbourne about politics. James, we were talking about PwC before.
Friends in PwC.
Yeah, and I went straight to the asylum seeker. Was there anything else that's going on with the whole PwC scandal except for the robo-debt implications?
Oh, like so much. It's like okay. PwC is having a big one at the moment, right? PwC has been in a lot of trouble all year. It was back in January, we had all these reports come out that there was a senior partner in PwC who was responsible for consulting with governments about tax policy. And one of his jobs was to talk to the Australian government about its new policy to try and curb multinational tax avoidance. So these big, like, international companies who work out how to get all their profits out of Australia and not pay tax on them. There's heaps of big companies that were involved in that. Part of doing that consulting with the government about how to write good laws about that would be signing a confidentiality agreement to be like, I promise not to tell anyone about the laws that I'm helping you write, especially not all of the multinational companies that the law is targeting, right? But this partner was like, yeah, that's good in principle, but I'm actually going to breach that confidentiality agreement, tell all the partners at PricewaterhouseCoopers what we're doing, and then they'll share it with all the multinationals that they have as like they're advising, so that they can subvert the scheme before it's even in place. It was a rather remarkable decision to do that, right? And they've been found out. They've been caught with their hand in the cookie jar, first through media leaks, and then more recently there was a big Senate inquiry into it. And that's we had the report of the Senate inquiry recently,
mm-hmm.
and the most recent action, and the reason for me to bring it up this time is more senior partners are being forced out of the business now. So, like, heads are rolling over this. They've fired the CEO of PwC Australia. They've replaced a bunch of people on the board. 12 partners have been forced out of the business one way or another. People are being investigated by the police. It is a huge scandal.
I mean, the damage that it does to a business's reputation, though, whether there are changes and people leave, is it repairable?
PricewaterhouseCoopers decided probably not, in that it has sold its government advising business for $1.
That I mean, you can just imagine them sitting around the boardroom. How much should we sell it for?
$1 is spectacular, especially considering in the last 2 years, just off the federal government, PwC did like $500 million of business. So like, it's a big business. Government is deeply dependent on consultants to help them do their, like, write public policy. Deeply dependent. It kind of goes back to our point before about, like, the culture in the public service, uh-huh, where they don't often have the capacity to give clear advice because there's so little experience and most of the people writing public policy are in the consultancies now.
So that who bought the company for a dollar?
This private equity company who specializes in like tarnished businesses. Uh-huh. Like they're in the corporate turnaround industry, oh, okay, is what right. they say in like quotation marks on their business. So they buy toxic assets and try and turn them into something.
Dr. James Murphy, it's always great to chat with you. We've run out of time, unfortunately, but we'll catch up with you in a couple of weeks' time.
See you then.
Thank you. Dr. James Murphy from the University of Melbourne.
Joy Drive, smart fun radio.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.